How's it going, everybody? Andrew Zarian here, Wrestling Observer Live. We're here every day, Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Saturdays, 1 p.m. with Jim Valley. And Sundays, 6 p.m. Eastern with me. I'm back live on the air. We were 2 weeks. We had a little bit of an issue connecting last week, obviously. Everybody, the whole pro wrestling world that's interested in AEW was in Las Vegas. I was there. I had to cut my trip short. I had a little family emergency. Everything is fine. No issues here, but I had to cut my trip a little short. I did not make it to the pay-per-view. I left Sunday morning. Can you believe that? I went all the way to Las Vegas, missed the pay-per-view, but you know what? It all worked out in the end, and I know a lot of people had a great time there. It was a really good pay-per-view. We're going to talk about that, obviously, a little bit. I'm going to be joined by Will Washington, Grapsity Podcast, one of my favorite people on the internet at this point. One of my top people on the internet. He's going to be joining us to talk about everything happening in pro wrestling, but I mean, this news the last couple days, not a lot of positive. CM Punk injured. Obviously, we know Jeff Hardy's injured. Cody Rhodes, possible torn pec. Not a easy injury to come from. We're hearing Bryan Danielson may be injured. And there's a couple other ones. This is, things are getting heated. Things are getting hot. People, the work rate has improved tremendously in professional wrestling. And these things are happening. Well, I want to talk to Will about, you know, why so many injuries now. It could be a coincidence. You know, Will had a post actually saying like in 2007, there were, it was just one after another every month. I think he said Mysterio and a whole bunch of other people. So I want to talk to him about that because this is a fascinating period in professional wrestling. Obviously, like I said, CM Punk injured, AEW title picture is a disaster right now. A lot of confusion. I watched Dynamite a little delayed. Right. So I want to talk to Will about that because there were a couple spots in that Punk match. I was like, oh, wow, I wonder if he got hurt. And obviously we find out on Friday that he did get hurt, which is causing a lot of issues here. But, you know, when we look at this, the big picture, I don't know what direction they should go in. A lot of people saying, you know, maybe this isn't the direction. I think it's fine. Doing an interim title is really cool. We're going to talk about this and a whole lot of other stuff. Also, Hell in a Cell preview happening tonight. Will Washington joining me, Wrestling Observer Live. Andrew Zarian here. We'll be right back here on Sports Byline USA. Wrestling Observer Live. Andrew Zarian here, joined by Will Washington, Grapsity Podcast. What's going on, Will?
Hey, it's Sunday, and I don't know. I'm just having quite the first Sunday of, I guess, my kids' summer break. Like, as soon as we're done here, I gotta go spark up the grill, and we're supposed to be cooking chicken wings and all that. It's gonna be a good time.
That was me yesterday. I did the whole barbecue thing with the kids. My summer vacation has not begun with my kids. I got another 2 more weeks till that starts. I'm looking forward to it. We were in Vegas together last week. We did a show together. We're live pal with Garrett. I had a blast having you on, and it's always a blast having you on anything we do. But I was like, you know what, let me message Will, let me see if he wants to come on very last minute. But I appreciate you coming on. A lot going on in pro wrestling, man. The aftermath of this past week has kind of trickled into long-term issues. I guess we'll start off with CM Punk and the confusing title picture for AEW. I didn't watch him get hurt live, but I was watching it, and I thought, you know, maybe something was going on. He was a little wobbly in certain points. And then on Friday, he came out and pretty much said he's hurt. Tony wouldn't let him relinquish the title. We also find out that now there is an interim title situation happening. What do you make of all this?
I don't hate interim titles the way a lot of people do.
Same here.
Mainly because I like that it holds booking accountable in a sense, because now we know when CM Punk returns, he's going to have to, we're going to have to settle the undisputed title situation. I like that, because the thing I hate more than anything else is when somebody relinquishes a title, returns, and never comes back for it. That annoys me. And I feel like interim titles hold them accountable. Only thing I don't like about the interim title situation is that, at least for as far as, excuse me, as far as AEW is concerned, they've never counted those interim reigns toward the lineal championship reign. And so whoever wins it here, are they just not going to be counted as a champion? I hope not. I hope that's not the case.
Is that what they've done with Cody?
The
title situation happened?
If you look at AEW's actual championship lineage for the TNT title, Sammy's reign isn't officially counted as having begun until after he beat Cody for the Undisputed belt. So those other days, like, don't count. And so that's where I feel like they have to have kind of a situation to address that, I hope, because the thing I would hate to see happen is, like, if Moxley wins the title and then he's not considered an actual two-time champion unless he beats CM Punk officially. I don't like that. But other than that, I do like the idea that CM Punk is guaranteed to compete for the title the moment he returns.
Yeah, I kind of like that too. I think the biggest confusion and I guess disaster piece to this is the Forbidden Door pay-per-view, because they had to make that make sense. On Wednesday, they announced Tanahashi. You know, he came out, got a big pop. People are ready for that Tanahashi match. And you still have to now incorporate those two in that Forbidden Door pay-per-view. There's a lot of argument to, you know, why is it Jon Moxley? You know, technically, Hangman should have his rematch. There's a couple other people that should be in this mix. I don't know. I don't feel as strongly for it or against it as much as other people do. I think it'll play out and it'll be interesting to see what happens. But do you think that, you know, maybe Hangman should have been involved in this position instead of Moxley?
I don't know. I mean, I get why people saw kind of a sleight of hand here, because the rankings were last put out before last week's Dynamite.
Yeah.
And so the last time we had seen the rankings officially had Wardlow actually as the number one contender. And then they said Moxley's the number one contender. And I recognize, you know, Tony even explained himself that the reason for that was because Moxley won in the main event of Dynamite this week, making him number one contender again. But those rankings hadn't been put out yet. So immediately people cried foul on all of that. And then, of course, they put out updated rankings, and then people were like, oh, you just changed it for because of the announcement. And then Tony Khan had to go through this whole explanation on Twitter. I feel like it wasn't as complicated as AEW made it out to be. And shout out to, I think his name was Jelly Janella on Twitter, who decided to put together a bracket to show exactly how this is going to work.
It's a simple bracket.
Yeah. And when you see it in bracket form, makes perfect sense, right? It just says winner of Battle Royal, Jon Moxley, on one side of the bracket. On the other side, it says Dominion. It says Hiroshi Tanahashi and Goto. And then the winner of those two face each other at Forbidden Door. When you see it in a bracket, makes perfect sense.
I think Jericho's commentary also kind of mixed it up a little
bit. Yeah.
So that Battle Royal is kicking off Dynamite on Wednesday. Like you said, the winner's going to face Jon Moxley. And the winner of that match, which I think most likely is going to be Moxley, will go on to face Tanahashi at Forbidden Door, but Tanahashi has to face Goto at Dominion beforehand, right, which is next week, this coming week. So, man, you know, I think it's pretty interesting. I think it's pretty cool. Unfortunately, I mean, an injury is not cool. That sucks for him, considering the fact, you know, it's been so many years since he won a world title. He finally got it. This is AEW's leading into a very aggressive campaign for TV. Obviously, the summer, going into the fall, going into the winter, they really, I mean, I think this is pretty common knowledge, they really want to get those ratings up prior to negotiating. And how do you do that? You do it by putting your title on someone that has a large name. Your TV program has to be, programming for TV has to be really aggressive. You can't have these lull periods on TV. Dynamite was out of control. I thought it was a fantastic Dynamite, one of my favorite Dynamites that I've watched in a very long time. I can't rank it. People are asking me, you know, on Thursday, can you rank the show? On Friday, I should say, can you rank the show? I can't rank like where it falls, but I thought it was a tremendous show, and I would anticipate that a lot of the shows are going to be like this. They're going to be really good shows because a lot of stuff is on the line right now. So, you know, I think it's terrible, but they did a pretty good job at kind of fixing this. Unfortunately, people got confused. What did you think of Rampage?
I actually really liked Rampage. I've been a fan, and I've told Tony this personally, that I think that the live Rampages that aren't go-home shows to pay-per-views have been some of the best episodes of Rampage. And this wasn't an exception. This was live from the Toyota Arena Ontario. Yeah, and that one, I just thought from top to bottom, they really You know, I feel like when they have to sell those standalone Rampages, they really have to make people's money's worth. When you don't, when you're doing it as a go home show, it's like, yeah, they've got the pay per view this weekend, so they don't have to do as much. But I feel like when it's just a standalone show, people have to get their money's worth. And I feel like that Ontario crowd got it with the Lucha Bros and Young Bucks. I thought Athena and Kiara Hogan was really good. Of course, they got the CM Punk promo and then the TNT title match. I feel like it got cut short. I'm guessing that the Punk promo wasn't originally planned for that show. Yeah. And that match only went like less than 10 minutes. And apparently Scorpio Sky's hurt too. So he's supposed to be getting an MRI this week. And it's just that the injury bug is like everywhere today.
It's everywhere. And then you wonder why. Like, why so much at the same time? But you had an interesting post on Twitter. People should definitely follow you on Twitter. You had this post that, you know, 2007 was like back-to-back injuries as well.
Yeah, and it's funny. I actually remembered all of those as I was going through.
Very impressive.
I was like, okay, just going top to bottom. Well, I remember that year very vividly because so much had to happen. The thing I didn't mention in that post when I talked about all of those main event injuries, three of those guys were champions. They had to vacate world titles three times that year because of the fact that the champions kept getting injured, the top guys. And there wasn't really anything different being done that year. You know, I feel like John Cena was probably going harder than any champion had gone previously. He was working every single house show. He was doing all of these big pay-per-view matches. But other than that, it didn't really feel like anything was all that different. But it just left and right. You had Triple H getting hurt. Shawn Michaels got hurt. Undertaker got hurt. Edge got hurt. Rey Mysterio was already hurt going into the year. But then Cena got hurt. And just left and right, all of these top main event injuries kept happening. And the reason I brought that up on Twitter was because we're kind of seeing left and right, we're seeing these top guys getting hurt. You know, the Cody rumors out there right now. There's Bryan Danielson is out there. And now CM Punk just this past Friday confirmed it. It's interesting to see. I don't know if anything particular is happening with it, but it's tough.
We have a lot more to talk about. Going to a break right now. Wrestling Observer Live, Andrew Zarin here, joined by Will Washington on Sports Byline USA. We'll be right back after this. Wrestling Observer Live, Andrew Zarin here, Sunday edition. Will Washington, Rap City Podcast, joining me. One of my favorite podcasts out there. I told Will how much I love his stuff. I told you in Vegas.
Much.
I was like, dude, I love everything you do. It's fantastic. 17-year vet of podcasting. We have a lot, like after the show we did a couple of months ago when you were on, like we spent like 45 minutes just like, I can't believe that's how you got in also, you know? So it's, I love hearing stuff like that. I thought it was fantastic. Something that we were both dealing with in Vegas was the MJF situation. It kind of, I don't want to dwell on it as much as everybody else has because it's old news by now, but we're still kind of dealing with it, and we don't have a direct answer. But you know, Wednesday MJF cut the promo of his life. I know a lot of people didn't love that promo. I could understand both sides, but I personally thought it was great. I thought it was tremendous. It was fantastic. He did a great job. It was a modern day work shoot promo, and I think it's been a while since we saw something like that, especially on TV, especially on the caliber of MJF to cut a promo like that. So the story was, obviously, he no-showed the fan fest. He worked a match on Sunday. It was another squash, 1-2-3. He was stretchered out. He left. There was a meeting on Monday. Wednesday, he cut the promo of his life. And now we don't know where we're going to be with this. What do you think, Will?
I don't know. You know, I've talked to a lot of people as far as that's all concerned. And I've heard everything from it was a work all along, which... I struggle with that.
I don't subscribe to that either.
And I say that simply because for those who follow me, they know that I had kind of given some conjecture on what I thought the thing was going to be or what I thought was going on based on people I had talked to in AEW. And then I was corrected by people in AEW to make sure that what I had said wasn't true. And with that, I feel like there's no way that wouldn't have even been important. That was such a minor detail that I feel like had this all been a work, making sure I got that detail correct wouldn't have mattered. Unless this is such a meticulous work that it's like almost like those choose your adventure type games where they're like, okay, if it goes this way, then make sure that we get these people correct. It wouldn't have made any sense. And so based on the conversations I had, I don't believe it was always a work. Do I believe it's a work now? Probably. Or at least do I believe there's some kind of agreement in place to make
agreement
sure things
in place,
are going?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. But it's fascinating TV, no matter what. It's very entertaining. And the promo, again, looking at it in a vacuum, I'm very entertained by this. It was the best promo that MJF has cut. It's one of the most entertaining things that's happened on TV. But like I've said before, the pipe bomb was also very entertaining television, and looked at in a vacuum, one of the best promos of all time. Looked at it long term, it was just CM Punk bringing up a bunch of systemic stuff with WWE that literally never got fixed.
Yeah.
And so, like, did that actually go anywhere? Did that solve anything? Not really. And was it good for anybody involved besides CM Punk? Not really. So I can kind of see the parallels with this particular promo as well.
I mean, word for word parallels, right? I mean, he really, there was somebody put a video on Twitter and it was like word for word, the same exact promo, which makes a lot of sense. And, you know, CM Punk came and chased them off afterwards, after his promo. So,
and that, by the way, was the first time people noticed CM Punk was limping.
He was limping, yeah.
The way he made his way out, and he definitely did not seem to be chasing him with any type of purpose.
Did he bust his foot when he jumped into the crowd?
That's what I'm hearing.
Man, you know what? For his sake, I hope he didn't. I hope he didn't do that. I hope that wasn't
it. I was talking with another wrestler in AEW about this 2 days ago, and we were both just kind of talking about the idea that, God, that sucks, because it's one thing for it to happen in the ring. Shit happens in the ring. But something that was kind of in your control and not related to wrestling necessarily, it was just the entrance. That, on the other hand, is something that nobody wants to see happen, and it just kind of happened.
Yeah. Yeah, terrible all around. I don't know. I'm very excited to see what happens here with this situation, because listen, this is the good thing about pro wrestling, right? When you don't know and you can't predict, it's always fun. I think a lot of people get wrapped up in the predicting what's going to happen or trying to finagle an angle that's for their liking. But like when something like this happens, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that adds a whole different level of excitement. NXT had a show yesterday.
They did, in your house. Somebody had pointed out they just put up the poster from last year's In Your House and put it side by side with this year's. And one, how many people from last year's are like in AEW now? It was kind of astonishing. But this year, it is truly a whole new regime for that entire brand.
Yeah, no, it was, it's like, I watched the main event. I didn't watch the whole show, right? I watched Mandy Rose and Wendy Chu, and I watched some of the Creed Brothers stuff, and I watched the main event. Bron Breakker is definitely the man, right? He's the guy. There's no question around, him being the guy that they're putting the prime focus on in that company. 100%. I think he's going to be very successful if he goes on track the way it's going. But this is a very different NXT. This is a very different show. There's no similarity left to compare it to anything else prior to this. This is more in terms of what they had envisioned for the company instead of, you know, becoming a hyped up version of Ring of Honor for a couple of years. But you could see that who they're putting the... you could see who they're putting the effort on there. And it's obviously, you know, Joe Gacy's one, Bron Breakker's one, Mandy Rose, Creed Brothers. You know, who do you think is going to be the breakout out of this group of NXT stars outside of Braun, obviously?
Well, you know, it's funny that you said that, because the one person that I think it's going to be is actually the person who still kind of embodies the most of the old NXT, and that to me is Carmelo Hayes, right? Like, Carmelo Hayes was an indie name that had a presence on the indies. He was Christian Casanova.
Yeah.
He was signed not as part of the newer type of class of WWE wrestler, but he was signed back when they were still kind of raiding the indies. And He kind of, as a matter of fact, he debuted on the old NXT, but he didn't really have much of a presence there until they rebranded the 2.0. But he still fits the formula of what old NXT is. But I also feel like he has the most upside of anybody I see there.
Yeah, I feel that there's a couple of people here. But, you know, when they come to the main roster with this, and great example, Max Dupree, right? Eli Drake, known guy, became LA Knight there. They changed his name again on the main roster. You could tell he's a main roster act. The guy's a great actor, great physique, great look. But they have taken away so much of it where you're not really seeing what he was able to do prior to any of this. Even in NXT, they took away a lot of it. When a guy like Braun Breaker goes up to the main roster, do you think he's going to have that same issue? Ciampa's another one, right? Tommaso Ciampa's another guy that... when he was in NXT and he was at his peak and people would fantasize about him coming to the main roster, it was always in a main position, right? The story was, this guy is tremendous. People are so behind him. Johnny Gargano was another one. It was almost, maybe it was almost a blessing in disguise that those two had to go back down to NXT, because I really don't have confidence that they are going to be able to present these guys that became, that got these cult followings and became, you know, stars in NXT, present them in the same vision on the main roster. They all tend to lose something.
Well, and I think now they are just kind of setting the precedent, because, like, look at LA Knight, right? Like, LA Knight was not a name that he had on the indies. Like, that was not a thing that they had to change. That was WWE's property. They had LA Knight. That was their guy. And yet they still brought him to the main roster with an entirely new reinvention. And I think it's kind of hard to see, you know, I still can't call the changes in NXT 2.0 like a complete success, right? Because I don't know. There hasn't been a full-on call-up of anybody who started in NXT 2.0 who is now on the main roster doing what they were doing in NXT 2.0 to then say that NXT 2.0 is a success. And with that, I don't believe that WWE sees any more value in what they're doing in NXT than what somebody was doing in the indies, right? I think somebody could very well just get called up and get rebranded and all of that, regardless of if WWE owned the origination of it or not. So I it's hard for me to say.
You kind of hit the point here. And by the way, that's WWE's point. What you're saying about how their NXT 2.0 star or NXT stars, right, of black and gold, they didn't come up and become tremendous stars. And like the homegrown guys, obviously Kevin Owens, he's a big star. Matt Riddle, he's a star. But as of right now, who's the guy that became the top guy in that on the main roster from NXT? You really... You don't really have too many of those guys. And that was how they look at it. And we can't count, you know, Roman Reigns and Moxley and Seth Rollins because they were FCW guys.
Because that was what I was going to bring up with Seth Rollins.
Yeah. Well, those guys really, it was just, Seth was there for how long, you know, in NXT? It was before the
Because he was there mostly the FCW era. And then he was there because he was the first NXT champion. I mean, because, like, it's not to say the guys didn't get championship reigns, right? Because they called up Finn Balor. Yeah. He did get the reign, but then that was kind of it. So
it's interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah. We'll touch on that when we get back from break. Andrew Zarian, Wrestling Observer Live. We'll be right back after this. Stay tuned. Wrestling Observer Live. Andrew Zarian here. Will Washington joining me. I tried to hit the post on that one. I couldn't do it, Will. I tried to hit the post on that bullet. Yeah.
I was going to say, that's like my skill of skills. I hitting the post, if I can't get it, I feel like I have failed for the day. But you know, I feel I've had it since like day one.
I was like, California Love, I could do California Love. This one, I was a little shaky. Hell in a Cell tonight. Once again, I'm seriously asking this question. I knew it was Hell in a Cell, right? I should know. There are so many people that are tweeting me and saying, wait a minute, there's a pay-per-view tonight? I'm shocked, actually.
Because this card... well, the problem is there's one SmackDown match on it. And for SmackDown, for the last 2.5 years being the brand that more people watch. Like, it's just a statistical fact. It is interesting that this pay-per-view, like, if you mostly follow SmackDown, you only got one match on this card. You would think, okay, they're obviously not done building. And meanwhile, this is mostly a Raw show. Mm-hmm. There's nothing else happening on this card. And then also, it's just kind of in a weird period where there's no champion around. And I feel like it's not that we haven't had a champion before, but this is kind of unprecedented to not have any champion for either brand. And I think one thing that championship matches help do is help sell you on the pay-per-view, because you know that the program going into it. And we don't have that here. There's only two championship matches on this card, period, at all.
Well, also, look at how many people are off this card, right?
Yeah.
Which is shocking. So we got Madcap Moss and Happy Corbin in a no-holds-barred match. Interest level for most people, zero. I'm going to be honest. Listen, I'm going to be honest. No knock at the talent, ever, right? I don't knock talent and perform, but I mean, I don't think this is the combination of people really care to see anymore. Six-person mixed tag match. Judgment Day versus AJ, Finn, and Liv. You know what? I kind of want to see this. I like Liv being in that pseudo Bullet Club with them. I think maybe this is a good chance for Liv once again to be in a nice little program here. There's a fourth person maybe coming to Judgment Day. Maybe that person will show up. Curious
that
about
could
that.
Be exciting. I don't know. I haven't really been feeling Judgment Day. I do like this combination of AJ and Balor and Liv Morgan, and I feel like it is really elevating Liv Morgan's stature, and that's always good. Judgment Day, I don't know. Something's not clicking for me, and I like them all as performers. But
you think it's
something
the sad
about
goth makeup?
I don't know, or the promos, or like something is just not hitting for me with the Judgment Day.
Yeah, they're just gonna start playing. Dude, they just sit down together, they play Depeche Mode, and they're done, right? That's all they do. United States Champion Theory defends against Mustafa Ali. This John Cena Theory thing is that's like happening in a sub feud online is interesting, and it kind of looks like they're doing something there. What do you think is going on here with Theory and the U.S. title?
I mean, that could be the thing that there's a lot of ways you can push that, right? Because like arguably John Cena is considered, especially by WWE, to be the greatest United States champion of all time. So there's like a very built-in thing to do here with this, to have John Cena come in for come back for a title that's considered his and go for it against the guy who WWE is kind of pegged as the next John Cena in Austin Theory. All of it kind of works together at SummerSlam. But of course, they've had guys that they thought were the future before to go up against John Cena at SummerSlam and didn't really work out all that well. Like, I think about John Cena versus Baron Corbin. And it's not to say Baron Corbin's career didn't work out, but at the time, it was like, okay, John Cena, Baron Corbin, one-on-one. This could be good. This could be good for Corbin. And like, Corbin's got exactly where he was back then, and that was almost 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to tell. I think Theory has the potential to be everything they want him to be. It's just a matter of can they commit to it.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, because first time I saw Theory was in Evolve 2000, right before the pandemic. And, you know, you saw him on the indies, and you're like, this kid's impressive. Good body, good, you know, in-ring is good. His promo was good. He had the look. And obviously Paul Heyman's a huge fan of his and kind of got him to come over there. But
and even in Evolve, they were talking about him as the next big guy.
They yes, they were.
About
yeah,
him as the guy who has all that potential to be the next big star in WWE.
Yeah, we got Kevin Owens versus Ezekiel. You know, I got to tell you, man, Ezekiel grew on me.
I don't know if Ezekiel has grown on me as much as Kevin Owens' reaction to Ezekiel,
it could be that too.
Is what's yeah. grown on me. I think Kevin Owens is the key to Ezekiel working right now, because like on its own, just Ezekiel coming out and saying, I'm Elias's brother, that's fine. But I feel like Kevin Owens' anger over it and him absolutely not believing it and wanting nobody else to believe it is what I think has made this as entertaining as it's been.
Yeah, Kevin Owens is tremendous in everything he does. Yes. We got a handicap match, Bobby Lashley versus Omos and MVP. I hope this feud is over. I genuinely hate that MVP and Bobby Lashley were split up. I genuinely hate that they split up that whole crew. I think it was a nice shine on guys like Shelton that, you know, they were in a main program, and I very much enjoyed seeing him. I think Bobby Lashley's great, but I'm hoping that this is the end of this feud, and maybe you can move Bobby Lashley into a main event picture, because really it's lacking with the top guys, especially babyfaces on that side. Cody's hurt too, so you got Cody. You know, Cody, Drew, Orton, Riddle. Did I say Cody again? Did I say Drew again? I think these guys are, you know, for a top level babyface positioning, I think that's great to put them in there. We got the Raw Women's Champion. This, and by the way, this is the match that got whacked out of place because of the situation with Naomi and Sasha, which we don't have an answer to here. They're indefinitely suspended still. I've heard nothing. Radio silence from everybody. Bianca Belair defends against Asuka and Becky Lynch in a triple threat match. This may be the match of the night.
I think it before Cody's injury, I would have
before
said
Before
so.
Cody's injury,
I would have said that the Hell in a Cell match was probably going to be, but these are three people who I absolutely trust to deliver. I think that we've seen what Becky and Bianca can do together. We saw that at WrestleMania. That was my personal match of the night. But then we've also seen what Asuka and Becky could do together. And we got a little glimpse of what Asuka and Bianca can. And so I trust that as long as it's put together in a way that makes sense, I think this match could deliver. My question is more for the aftermath and how who does Bianca move on to? Because it feels like Becky and Asuka aren't done with each other. That program feels like it's really just getting its legs under it. And that's more what I'm interested in, is what's next for Bianca.
Yeah, me too. And we got the Hell in a Cell match. Maybe, possibly, probably. Cody Rhodes versus Seth Rollins 3. It was reported Cody tore his pectoral muscle. And that is not a fun injury. I tore my pec. I've tore it, and it is extremely painful. I don't know how far of a tear it is, how big of a tear it is. We really don't have too much information on this. Dave reported that it's possibly a pectoral muscle injury that he did in the gym while working out. What do you do here? If Cody is really banged up and hurt, and let's say he needs some time off, does Seth go over here?
I imagine that's the only way to go, right? But more than that, what do you do without Cody?
What do you do without Cody?
What happens without Cody? Raw is literally a show that has a countdown to Cody clock. That show has really put all of its eggs in the Cody basket, and that would be devastating for that brand to not have Cody. It is devastating for the old WWE because Roman's not around.
Yeah, Roman's not around. I'm going to get to this a little bit, and this kind of goes into... actually, to be honest, WWE told me firsthand that the brand extension is still the brand extension, and there are going to be people that are specifically on the brand, but your top-level guys and women will be crossing over more. There's going to be more synergy between the brands, which makes a lot of sense to me. I think, like, I'm okay with a soft brand split if you have one title. You should have a soft brand split if you have one title. If you have two titles, it becomes a little bit more... the argument goes the other way. But since they only have one title at this point, on there's one tag title. There's one world title for the men's side. I think it's fine for you to go over. And the women's side, there's one tag title too. So it's okay. I'm okay with them going over each side. Now, here's my issue with this pay-per-view. Roman's not on it. Okay, fine, right? Roman's not on it. Riddle's not on it. Orton's not on it. Ronda's not out on it. That is a problem, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's not like this is some kind of rinky-dink arena or market. This is Chicago that they're in tonight. This is the Allstate Arena. This is one of WWE's like top markets for running a bigger show in. WrestleMania was in this arena. WrestleMania 22, you know, and WrestleMania 13. Like, they've done major shows in this venue. And to think about the fact that you've got this market, you sold out this show, in one of your biggest markets, one of the biggest markets, period. And you're not really giving them much of anything.
I would say it's the biggest market in pro wrestling right now, Chicago.
That would be very difficult to argue. Yeah.
Right. I mean, more than New York. I mean, New York's always been like a huge market. New York, Philly, Boston, Chicago. Those are the top four. But I would say Chicago's the number one market right now, because no matter if it's WWE or AEW, they're doing unbelievable business there. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that it is easy to get to for both coasts. It's an easier trip to get to. You know, it's 2 hours from New York. What is it? 3 hours from LA, from the West Coast.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, I could
around
see
that. There. So it's an easier destination to go to, but I don't think a Hell in a Cell pay-per-view is a destination pay-per-view. You know, what AEW is doing, AEW has done a great job at convincing people that every pay-per-view should be a destination, because it's four times a year or five times a year. For WWE's sake, they're running, what, 16, 17 PLEs? Premium live events, for those who don't know. I hate that term.
I'm glad that nomenclature has stuck with you, though.
It
has. The fact that you said
it is.
PLE, you didn't even hesitate.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm so used to corporate lingo that I deal with on a daily basis. And when I saw that come up on an email from WWE to me, I'm like, oh, I love that this is their new corporate lingo. It's not a pay-per-view anymore. It's a PLE. And then now everybody's calling it PLEs, by the way. The whole industry is calling them PLEs. I still like pay-per-view, but I'm going to do it to annoy people. It's a PLE.
It's a PLE, okay.
You know, 16 shows, and now you're in a market, a top market. You're trying everything to sway the perception of your brand from being this stale product, which, by the way, there's a lot of people that don't feel that way. I'm one of these people that does feel that way, and I'm very honest about how I feel about professional wrestling. When I'm in a slump with the product, I'm going to tell you, I'm in a slump with the product. WWE, I'm in a total slump with the product right now. I don't get that excitement as much as I used to. Even WrestleMania, man, was it great? Yeah, it was a really good WrestleMania. I enjoyed everything, both nights. I enjoyed everything about it. But right now, they have conditioned me to not care about these matches. And Cody, Seth in a cage in a cell, that's a great match. And I care about those two, and I want to see them wrestle. I just, everything is because I'm so desensitized to their booking, where I don't expect anything huge to happen. And that's a problem. That's a problem for me, that's a problem for you, and that's a problem for the viewers, especially ones that are watching the PLE. Wrestling Observer Live, we're going to be back right after this, joined by Will Washington, one of my favorite guests on the show. We'll be right back. Wrestling Observer Live, final few minutes of the show. Andrew Zarian here. Hey, listen, I never plug my stuff. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian on Twitter. I drop some scoops every now and then. You can follow Will Washington on Twitter. Where can people follow you? What's your handle?
Yeah. You could follow me. I am, you see it on the screen, at William RBR. If you don't have a screen, then I am at William RBR. And you can also find me. I host Grapsody every Saturday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That is at youtube.com/Fightful. And then I also host Day After Dynamite as well. There's also a show I'm going to be hosting starting tomorrow, but I don't believe that's announced yet. So I'm going to save that one. But that one's actually kind of big as well.
I like that we've created this very nice group of pro wrestling media personalities and journalists that all get along. We all chill. We all hang out. Like, I think it's great. I think it's awesome that you come on here. Sean comes on here. I have Dave on here. Garrett comes on. Like, it's a nice little bridge between all of us. Because, listen, we're at the end of the day, what are we doing? We're talking about professional wrestling. It's something that we've all loved since we were kids. It's not something that, you know, you get into for the money later on in life and say, you know what, I'm going to start covering professional wrestling. It doesn't work that way. You kind of have to, this has to be engraved in you from childhood. I'm scarred from it. I would have had a whole different path. I told Dave in Vegas, I go, Dave, you know, you ruined my life with this. I was IATA radio. I would turn it on. I found that show and I got hooked even more than I've ever been with professional wrestling. I grew up, you know, my father was a bodybuilder, my grandfather was a bodybuilder. So I grew up with like wrestling being in my life. But that show 20 some odd years ago really set the trajectory of my life in this direction. So listen, everybody loves it. And we're out of time here. Wrestling Observer Live. We're going to be back next week with another great guest, Will Washington. Hell in a Cell is tonight. So watch it, tweet me, and let me know what you think. We'll be all back next week. Take care, everybody.